Well, good morning, Mike, and Happy New Year.
Same to you, Jen.
Or perhaps we should say Hopeful New Year. Your work as an appellate lawyer for people on death row takes you into some of the cruelest practices of the state. But you also see hopeful signs of progress. Support for the death penalty continued its long-term decline in the U.S. in 2022. At the close of the year, Oregon commuted its death row and new death sentences, and public support for the death penalty remained near 50-year lows. So let's talk about key issues in public support for or opposition to capital punishment, starting with Kate Brown's decision at the end of her term as governor. What was that decision, and what do you make of it in the shift from an ongoing moratorium of the death penalty?
Well, it was very bold and clear. You know, Oregon had done some clever legislating 2 years ago to basically remove the death penalty implicitly from everyone. But she came out and said that, unlike previous commutations, she's not doing anything based on rehabilitative efforts. She said instead, it reflects the recognition that the death penalty is immoral. It's an irreversible punishment that does not allow for correction. It's wasteful, it does not make communities safer, and cannot be and never has been administered fairly and equitably. And her announcement made quite a splash all over the country. It was featured in the every annual review of the death penalty, and is actually a template that California is following. And California has about a third of everybody in this country.
And that's where most of your work is in California, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I had two Oregon cases that have gone now, and there's 690 people on death row in California.
That's a sizable percentage of the overall people on death row in this country, correct?
Yeah, there's about 2,500 total around the country. So it's a big chunk. And they are doing what Oregon did. In Oregon in 2019, just systematically deconstructed death row. They sent everybody away to other prisons and mixed them in with other prisoners. They got rid of the execution gear and room. And California is doing exactly the same thing. This year in particular, they started voluntarily transferring people to other parts of the state. This year, they're taking down all of death row, and they're going to move everybody out of San Quentin and distribute them up and down the state, mostly to prisons in the California Central Valley or in the southern part of the state.
What's the significance of that integrating of death row inmates with other prisoners in terms of their experience of that and the kind of the sociology of life in prisons?
Well, it shows in practice that people on death row are widely varied. Some of them have never did anything bad before or since. Others have been always bad, but have learned how to adapt. People on death row, the experience thus far has been that they are just like every other prisoner. They don't in any way stand out with their behavior.
Management point of view, these are not, you know, troublemakers or hard to manage people in prison.
That's right. So the most remarkable thing to me about 2022 is that there was such a deluge of crime and punishment rhetoric. The Republicans made it the basis of their effort to reclaim political power in places where the Democrats had been ruling. And they just saturated the media. But it was all about how much they love cops. It was all about trying to create climates of fear that completely left out the death penalty. So the survey you mentioned, it was a Gallup poll taken at the height of the political campaign during the trial, the Parkland killer, and it showed the same long-term decline in belief in the death penalty that has been in effect for over 20 years now. So what was the chief issue in like the 1988 election? Michael Dukakis probably lost to George Bush because of the death penalty. Bill Clinton visited an execution to begin his campaign for the presidency. It was the ticket to power for prosecutors and for legislators who wanted to rise in the world. But now it's a dispirited world on the state's side. Everybody there knows that the death penalty is not a matter of great interest or concern. It's completely lost the steam that it used to have.
And even in the far right.
Yeah, they're all about kissing the police and funding the police. and toxic homeless people. They've got lots of things to say about crime and punishment, but none of them include the death penalty.
So, I mean, this is also an activity of the state that is perhaps different from cops policing on the street, those aspects of the state. Is there something symptomatic about the administration and the long process it takes that's involved in killing someone that doesn't fit with kind of that swift justice, the rowdy side of the far right that is more interested in dismantling the state than having it execute its cruelties more efficiently?
Well, two or three things have happened. I think one is the DNA has shown that the state gets it wrong. And somehow the right wing has always had this mysterious exception. They attack government in every way, but they've never questioned the efforts of the police to identify killers and then to execute them. But it's now obvious that mistakes not only have been made, but are being made. And even I, a professional skeptic, have been shocked at how many bad cases there are. It's just the police get these confirmatory hypotheses. They get an idea really quickly. They see nothing that would cause them to question what their first guess was, and they get it wrong all the time. And the narratives on television and the movies have repeatedly portrayed that story, and it's gripping. I mean, the idea of an innocent person being executed is a chilling one, I think, for everybody. So, and that has had an effect. It's made a lot of right-wingers know that this is government work like all other government work. It's full of mistakes, and the consequences are irreversible, as Kate Brown said.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, for one thing, it's different from other kinds of government work. It's ethically prohibited for doctors, and I believe most health professionals, to administer the death penalty. So many of the prison officials who carry out these executions have not been trained in even basic emergency work and putting in an IV and using these drugs. So it's in his own category. And I wonder about the botched executions thesis. It's kind of like abortion. For a long time, abortion rights rode on botched abortions, but those had signal value over a period of time. But I don't think the botched abortions accounted for the shifts over time in abortion politics in this country. I mean, there is a kind of high moral ground that has been claimed by conservatives, including conservative Catholics. But I think some of the news around how the European Union would not allow drugs to come into this country to be used to kill people because it's considered immoral and illegal in much of the world. I think for many people, that was news, that this is considered basically an expression of cruelty and unjust in how it's carried out.
Well, it is pretty creepy. I mean, because it is so hard to get execution drugs, you've got these stories of Arizona officials meeting behind shuttered malls, buying plain brown wrappers with cash money. I mean, it's the whole process of obtaining the drugs is very shady.
It took them into that, away from the clinical field and into the shady world of drug dealers.
Exactly. That's where they are. Yeah. And they don't know how to do it. Now, I'm not medically hip enough to know what their problems are, but I know they spend hours and hours poking veins in some people and are still unable to somehow kill them with these.
Well, so what's considered an effective execution historically in terms of the displays of cruelty or suffering and the role of suffering in these cases? Anesthesiologist from Emory University said lethal injection creates a circus of suffering. What does that mean?
Because you have three drugs, basically. The typical combination or cocktail involves a drug that will paralyze you and one that keeps you from like expressing concern or expressing any feelings, even of extreme pain. And another one that kills you that's extremely painful.
That stops your heart.
Yeah, it's basically the drawings are that you are completely paralyzed, you can't express anything, and you're suffering, you're being subjected to this immense pain.
So a botched execution, and this is a term that has gathered a lot of currency, botched execution is one where you see the struggle involved and you are witness to the pain.
Well, that's one kind. Another kind is where you're simply unable to pull it off. There have been three instances recently where they've not been able to actually execute somebody. They've not been able to find the right vein, the right place to inject the poison. So in Tennessee and Alabama have now stopped or suspended all executions because of instances where they tried but failed to execute someone. So they're reviewing their whole procedure. Yeah, 2022 was notable not only for the continuation, despite all the political rhetoric, of the decline in support of the death penalty. It's also noticeable for the repeated instances of failures at attempting to execute by way of lethal injection.
So what do you see ahead if this trajectory continues and state by state the death chambers are closed and sentencing is taken off the options and there is both life without possibility of parole, which is another cruel sentence of the state, and also this becomes like making abortions illegal, kind of a signature policy of right-wing states? Is that what we're seeing ahead?
Well, for one, it's going to be very fragmented because the U.S. Supreme Court now is leading the way to executions. They do everything they possibly can to further executions. They don't even bother to write opinions anymore. They just grease the skids. So it will be a state-by-state matter. And right now, executions are concentrated in a handful of states. Texas and Oklahoma together have more than half of all executions last year. That will continue. So I think we'll see the red and blue states split. But now it's 37 states. That's more than three quarters of the states in this country have gotten rid of the death penalty. So it will live on in the places where it lives on right now, but it will live on problematically and there will be difficulties. And I don't know, you know, this country has long waves of gradually increasing support and gradually decreasing support in the death penalty. And there's a long wave in effect now. It was not altered this year, despite the intense political rhetoric. So I think it's going to stay in place, and I think the death penalty will continue to fade here and fade there for the first.
Well, before we close, let's talk about life without possibility of parole. I remember in earlier Left in the Law segments, you said that as long as the death penalty is in practice, it sucks all the political oxygen out of the room in addressing life without possibility of parole. What's your assessment of that now?
Just the same. I mean, there are a lot of things to say about life without possibility of parole, or LWOP, as it's known in the legal community. It creates a situation where you've got nothing to lose, and that's always risky for an administrator. So I think that the exploration of what that truly means is going to be something that we can't get to until the death penalty is resolved. But what's happening now is that as courts get worse and worse, legislators and prosecutors get better and better. And legislation in California now has passed that allows people who are under the age of 25, it effectively refuses LWOP. It says you must make such people eligible for parole because they weren't the new, you know, mental science that's guiding the legislature is that you're not a fully formed person until age 25.
And so, that age has been consistently pushed up historically for reasons that may have more to do with politics and science, but it's still a good trend.
So what's happening is you can be, the minimum age for being executed is 18. That happened about 20 years ago. Before that, you could be executed at age 13 or 14. But now,
you mean in any state?
Yes, in any state. The U.S. Supreme Court said that the Eighth Amendment prohibits execution of people under the age of 18. So that's a universal law now in this country.
But states, like with abortion, can introduce their own criteria.
That's right. So what California has done, they passed a law now saying you've got to give people a chance for parole because they will change. They have changed. We know that after the age of 25. So there's a paradox now, in effect, is that you can be executed if you are 22 when you committed your crime but you cannot be denied a chance at parole.
Yeah, so maybe there is something about highlighting these cases and the irrationalities of the state, as well as its cruelties and the racism and class and arbitrary basis of some of these sentences. You said you can have very, very different outcomes whether the crime is committed in one part of the country or another.
Absolutely. And there is a serious effort being made right now in California with the passage of a Racial Justice Act to examine ways in which racism affects every part of the prosecution, beginning with the police who are investigating the case and gathering evidence through the choice of prosecution to make whatever sentence, to the selection of a jury, through the whole process. And I think there's no doubt now that racism has infected every part of this process. We're finding just an oral argument, the way the whole concept of gangs, you know, white people belong to hate groups, but black people and brown people belong to, quote, gangs. And there's this demonization of groups of adolescents gathering together.
Including in prisons, right? The sociology of prisons themselves and how particular prisoners are identified.
Sure. Well, I think what's happening is that the sentence of LWOP is at play, and we're going to be talking about it a lot more. It's going to be eroded by recognitions, for example, that people change over, and particularly people whose crimes are committed as late as teenagers or very young adults, are not going to be the same people. I mean, I've seen that transition because the super due process means I've got cases that I've been appointed 35 years ago on. People are simply in no way the same beings that they once were. They don't have the same vocabulary, the same morality, the same way of approaching the world, the same way of weighing things. They have changed. And that's a fact. That happens. So what are we going to do? What impact does that fact have? Does it mean nothing in light of the magnitude of the crime, or does it mean a lot?
Yeah. Well, there's, I think you're saying the subtext here is there's reasons for hope on the political horizon, and we need to keep pushing further and deeper into the support and opposition to capital punishment and put it in a larger context than often even the news does in covering botched abortions. There's a lot more to be said here, and you're saying reason for hope as we look ahead.
Absolutely. In places where there was no hope 30 years ago, like district attorney offices, legislatures, and the places where we used to place all of our hopes, namely the courts, are the worst place in the world to be right now.
Well, thanks, Mike, for this New Year in review for the death penalty and your take on where we're at. Have a good New Year, and we'll see you next month.
You got it, Jen. See you then.